We're talking right now with Margaret Avery. She's an Academy Award nominated actress. You might remember her from her breakout role as Shug in Steven Spielberg's The Color Purple in 1985. And you have not become a no-hit wonder. As a matter of fact, you've done quite a few films. And even right now, as we speak, you have a couple in the theaters, Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins, and Meet the Browns. Busy.
Yeah, Meet the Browns, I don't think it's come out yet. Maybe it's next month.
It's coming out soon. So you're going to have two that are competing against one another.
But Roscoe, that came out just Friday. Hello, everyone.
And how are you? So tell us a little bit about the films that you got that's out now. Tell us a little bit about the Roscoe film.
Well, it's pretty much of a riot. You go to the film, you got to be in the mood to laugh and just have a good time. You know, we're not doing heavy acting here. It's a fun premise. Roscoe, who is my son, played by Martin Lawrence, comes home for our 50-year anniversary, and all the sibling rivalry comes out, and all the past, you know how that baggage flows when you get around family that you haven't been for a while, but everything gets resolved. But during the getting it resolved, you see how dysfunctional the family is, and hopefully everyone can have a few laughs along with it. We had a ball making it.
It sounds like it. Of course, with Martin Lawrence around, it's not going to be a serious type of pursuit.
Right, right. And then, of course, we've got Monique and Cedric the Entertainer and the beautiful Joy Bryant, who plays the Black Valley girl, and she's so just a doll. And our wonderful people from the production people. One thing that I recall the most is that we, off camera, we had these luxurious trailers, and that to me was just wonderful because you spend hours on the set, and sometimes we were waiting for the rain to stop or the thunderstorms. And to have a wonderful trailer to feel relaxed in is so important. I love producers that treat the actors like we're special.
Well, that's true. And they should always do that because, of course, if the actors are in a good mood and well taken care of, they will provide a fine entertainment in their roles.
Well, you know what? You make an excellent producer.
Yes, I don't have the money to do that, though, so, you know. It's easy to spend other people's money, you know, so I'm good at that. I could do
but
that.
But with a comedy, the thing that's so good about a comedy is that you have a chance on set to remain loose because you want to be loose for everything to be spontaneous, whereas with a drama, I found myself as the talent trying to hold on to the character and serious, and it's exhausting.
Mm.
Now, but with a comedy, it's just fun.
You're right.
Relax and let go.
Hmm. You're right. I mean, comedy is a lot of fun to do, and especially if you're doing it with fun people around you. And drama, you know, it can be tense sometimes. You can take it home with you sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I hate to do drama around. If a play is going to be around the holidays, and it's a heavy, dark character, I pass on them because then my Thanksgiving is down or the Christmas is down. It's very hard to be really into a character and not bring it somewhat, have it come home with me.
Mm.
So I remember Billy Crystal once said that he passed on doing the Academy Awards. I've always loved him as the MC because he's so spontaneous. You can always tell the ones who are comedians because they add such spontaneity to everything. But he said that when one of his parents died, he just wasn't in the mood. He was sad, so he couldn't be funny. And I think there's a great parallel in that because when you're performing, your soul is out there. Your spirit and everything is showing.
Mm, so, that's true. And
all you people who are striving to be actors, I'm hoping that they're studying and honing their craft and come to Los Angeles or to New York for stage and give it a shot.
And Boston's becoming a big movie place, too.
But I always, always stress, get your education. Get your education. Don't just drop everything, come out of high school and go into it, because it's a very difficult business.
Let me ask you a question in terms of your own background. Where are you from, and where did you get the acting bug, and how did you break into the business?
Well, I was born in Oklahoma and a Navy child, and my dad came to San Diego, and so I really grew up in California, in San Diego, and then got my college education at San Francisco State and went into teaching. Of course, in those days, there weren't many professions offered for women, and particularly women of color. I mean, most women went into social work or teaching or nursing at that time, and so I chose education. And lucky me, it's been a wonderful background for me. When I say education, I taught elementary school. And around about that time, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and I recall him talking about your dreams. See, my parents never supported me to be an actor. You know, they felt that studying singing and dancing, there were enough people of color singing and dancing and smiling, and so they said, get your education. And at the time, I didn't value that statement, but once I started teaching, and that was beautiful, I started to think, well, you know, if my passion truly is acting, then I've got to get started. And so I gave up what for me was like security, a great paycheck each month, because teachers in California will only get paid once a month. I don't know how that is anywhere else, but it teaches you to budget. And so I came to Los Angeles because I figured, well, I'd rather be a starving artist in California and not that far from home, only like 150 miles, rather than be in New York, a starving actor. And mm-hmm. and it gets cold there.
That's true.
You know, I'm not used to that kind of cold. So worked around theater, doing free theater. When I say free theater, it's like community theater, and that was during the time that I was studying acting and the dance and the voice, and working for free at night, singing in clubs on the weekends, trying to develop my voice. And at that time, we had a lot of difficult issues with, like, you just sit in and sing if you want it. We don't have that much now, unfortunately. But after I did that and trained, suddenly what happened, the black exploitation film started. So, and that's really got me film credit. And because I had studied, all the actors who had been studying at that time, we were cast immediately and did our one takes, because they were very low-budget films, probably C films, not even B films, mm-hmm. but we would pray that there would be some kind of problem with sound or tech or something so that we could do another take. But it really, really trained us. So once that happened, I was doing a play at one time, and Clint Eastwood saw me. It's a play that I got the Drama Circle Award for. It's called Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie? And Clint Eastwood cast me in Magnum Force. And if any of you out there have seen Magnum Force, I play the little sophisticated prostitute that my pimp throws Drano down my throat. Oh, my God, my mom never liked to watch that.
Well, I remember that, too. Oh. That was
tough. You remember that?
Yeah.
And so with that film, that small part, cameo role, a lot of the right, you might say, quote, people saw me in the film industry, and my television career started, because all I had to do is say I was in Magnum Force, and boom, I was cast, and of course I was trained, and so that's what happened.
You were in a ton of shows. I mean, everything from the new Dick Van Dyke Show to Kojak and Sanford and Son. I know you had a recurring part in Harry O. And also, I actually remember this series. You were
That's the name of it. I was trying to think of it the other night. Harry O.
Harry O. Yeah.
David Jansen.
And then you also were a regular on a show called AES Hudson Street, which I actually remember. It didn't last too long though.
No, and so I'm trying to remember the name. See, they have working titles sometimes, and then they change the name. Was it 413th Street at one time, or
that one? I'm not sure.
It's at Hudson Street. Okay, yeah, it was a good series, and I think that was the closest I ever got to being a regular on a series.
Yeah, well, you had a regular role on that, but it didn't last too long. Unfortunately, the series kind of died.
That's right.
But you were also in a couple of funny comedies, Which Way Is Up and The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh, and also I noticed a lot of films regarding music in your career. You seem to be in music films a lot. Like for instance, the Ben Vereen. The Louis Armstrong Chicago Style, the Scott Joplin movie. There's a few of them that have music things that you were in.
Well, I think it's what was going on at the time and what Hollywood was willing to produce. And most of the time, if you even remember, excuse me, I've got my allergies here. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles. It's about 73.
Oh, I don't want to hear that. It's freezing cold here in the 20s right now.
You see, I had to get that dig in, right?
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You know, it's like even Cicely Tyson did famous women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think probably with Scott Joplin being an Afro-American, that's how that became produced. And it, even with the black, it seems like Hollywood follows sort of like a what's in this decade, you might say. Because with the black exploitation films, it was always the pimps and hookers and robbers and those scenes,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. It was what was happening in the streets of Harlem and other places in the city, and it was like an easy story to project with action, because that was what sold action films and shoot 'em ups and that kind of thing.
Mm.
The modern black cowboys, I guess. And then with movies, or let's say movies for television, it moved into doing more educational and sophisticated roles, people of color who accomplished things in our country.
Well, you know, here you were doing all this stuff in the 1970s. Then in the middle of 1980s, you do a movie for Steven Spielberg called The Color Purple, where you play a drug-riddled, fly-by-night singer, Shug Avery.
Sure.
You use the same Shug Avery with the same last name, which is interesting. And that gets you an Academy Award nomination, and everybody in the world now knows who you are. What was it like working with Steve and Oprah? And also tell us a little bit about what happens when you're nominated for an Academy Award.
Okay, well, it was wonderful working with Steven, because it was I finally got out of the feature film B films and had the luxury of good food on the set, a director that knew how to communicate to actors what he wanted, and he was very specific. He was easy to work with, and that was a pleasure, you know, because a lot of directors haven't worked with actors or they haven't studied acting, and they'll just go on and on and on rambling about how they want the character to be in that scene, and it's confusing. But Steven would say something like, "Do you remember when you were a kid and such happened, the feeling you felt?" And the boom, I could see with Whoopi and Oprah, whenever he whispered something in his ear, the next take was like magic. It was different. He really knew how to get the best out of you.
Now, the rumor has it that Patti LaBelle and Tina Turner were both offered that role. Is that true?
Well, I know Tina Turner was offered the role. Did you see her on the Grammys?
I did, yeah. She looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. She and Beyonce, they, it was just so good to see old school and new school together with such tremendous talent, you know, performing.
I thought that the Grammys last night were unbelievable from the beginning with Sinatra and Alicia Keys. It was just an amazing night.
I missed the beginning, doggone it. I just saw in the paper this morning that they had said that they opened with that.
It was amazing.
But your question was...
I wanted to know how it felt to be nominated for an Academy Award and how that might have changed your career.
Well, you know, now at that time, there weren't many films out there for women of color. I think the last film that we had before Colorport Purple was Sounder with Cicely Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think maybe like 7 or 8 years had gone by. And so when Colored Purple came, it was like phenomenal. It was in... Most people didn't know that that was a film from the book. So there's so many things that happened. There was, Alice Walker had written this wonderful book, Pulitzer Prize winner, and a lot of blacks didn't like it because we didn't show in the film the redeeming qualities of Mister. And so they felt that, oh, this film should represent blacks. Or they were hungry to see black images on film, and they were very disappointed that, in their interpretation, it put the black man down. And we could go on and on about that, but such powerful messages for everyone. And I did tour Europe with film, doing PR for it, mm-hmm. and I did have a lot of Europeans say, well, is that the way black men are? So, at that time, there was a... if you see The Color Purple now on stage, that part of the character is left in for Mister. You see the redeeming qualities of him, and it's more acceptable. Now, Steven shot all of that, but the final cut of the film was 4 hours, so he had to cut 2 hours of the film.
Wow.
And... you just never know when those scissors get to cutting in the editing room. You don't know how it's going to go, but that part of the film got cut. I know that with Roscoe Brown. I mean,
has the DVD come out yet?
I got cut a lot.
Has the DVD come out yet of that Color Purple with the whole four-hour movie?
I know that they've done a lot with that. They did how it was made, and they shot. I'm not sure which DVD. I know I've done some I've
commentary
participated
stuff.
In a yeah. couple, but I'm not really sure what they were.
Mm.
Mark.
Huh.
Well, I don't know, did I answer your question?
Well, you still didn't respond to one thing. When you were nominated for that Academy Award, did that change things for you at all?
Okay, all right. So no, it didn't change much for me because you know, women of color were really limited, much more so than our counterparts, men of color, Afro-American men. There's more out there for them. They're not limited to working in black films or in a family situation. So Danny Glover, I mean, he's worked with other actors as the sidekick, and you see that all the time. But with women of color, we're just so limited.
Even now, 23 years after...
Even now, because I'm anxious to see... I watch Halle Berry, and I watch our beautiful... Oh, I'm having a senior moment here. She's on Ugly Betty.
Okay. Vanessa Williams.
Mm-hmm. I watch them because they've broken out, for sure. And there might be someone that I've missed because I don't watch television 24/7. But with them, they haven't been limited to a black situation. Now, I'm not talking about the CSIs and all. I think that they have like the middle-aged woman doing something like the person in the cop's office that comes, the people answer to. And there's a lovely actress out there that has that role. But as as a whole, it's always a black situation. Hmm. And when that changes, when I can see that change, then I can, I'll feel comfortable saying that the business has changed. One way, though, the business has changed. Tyler Perry, I really do admire him, and I said this to him, his face, but I love the way he makes, even though they're black films, they're about family, and they're about coming together, and the importance of family, the importance of family unity and respecting one another. Because at this time, so much of America is broken homes. It must be 50%, and the children suffer so much.
Mm. Talking about things like that, do you do some stuff for charity in that direction?
Yes. I work with women, battered women and children, sexual abuse, and going to shelters and helping to inspire the women. Usually it's around low self-esteem and getting themselves in a position where they're dependent on an abusive relationship to survive. So they feel they're in a catch-22. And then, of course, I'm giving you the simple answer. But all answers are multifaceted. They're kind of complex, but that's the general idea.
Have you ever heard of an organization called Darkness to Light?
No, I haven't.
It's an organization to help.
Is that with the runaway teens?
No, that's actually to prevent sexual abuse in children.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a very interesting.
Let me write that down. I'm wondering if that's here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's chapters out there. I know they're out in Boston. They're around the country. Darkness to Light. And I think it might be darknesstolight.org on their website, but I'm not exactly sure. Are you involved in politics at all?
Other than, you know, I get out and encourage people to vote. And I'm so excited about this election that young people, it's like I'll talk to them and they say, oh, yeah, I'm registered. And that just, I'm just happy that they're interested. You know, it seems like it's a time that the apathy is not anything the way it used to be. And that excites me because the only way we can move forward and be responsible citizens is to take part in creating what we want.
It seems to me, just from as a talk show guy here, that the hatred of George Bush, together with the rock star image of people like Obama, has really awakened people and got them more involved than ever.
Well, that's an interesting analogy. I hadn't thought of it that way. When you say the hatred, I mean, I think maybe the war. The war, I think, has upset so many people. But what's upset me the most was just how Bush got in office in the first place. And then America reelected him a second time.
They did. They did.
So,
they elected him.
I mean, it's almost like, hey, we let it happen.
So are you going to support the Democratic nominee?
Well, yes, I am a Democrat.
Yeah.
And I'm going back and forth all the time because both candidates are so exciting and have so many qualities that we need. To me, if the Democratic Party really wins, if we could elect the two of them to work together.
It would be nice if they were on a ticket together. I think it would be a landslide election if they could do that.
Yes. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I predicted that was going to happen a long time ago with Clinton as president and Obama as vice president, but it may be the reverse.
Oh, who knows?
Yeah.
We just don't know, do we?
Mm. But it will be, it's
at least, I'm thinking, my goodness, in my lifetime, to see an Afro-American run for president is quite astonishing.
Well, they have before. I mean, Jesse Jackson has run before, and other people have run. But this is in a major party and with major support in white communities, which is, you know, that's an unusual thing, I think, here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, he has a gift, Obama, to inspire people. So I'm thinking that's beautiful. If we could get the two of them working together, I think this country will really shape up and change our image. Oh, my God, I was in Ghana last October in a situation. I was sitting at a restaurant in the hotel, and this flight attendant from, I think he was on an Italian airline, and he said, "Are you," and I forget what he asked, what ethnicity or I was, what country I was from, and I said, "No, I'm American. I'm sorry." And before I could even think, I mean, that slipped out, an apology, because I didn't realize how embarrassed I was being an American in Europe or in Africa. Now, that was a real Freudian slip.
Yeah, I'm certainly not embarrassed being an American anywhere, but maybe...
Oh, yeah, well, I had a lot of European friends call and say, "What's wrong when we elected Bush the second time?" They said, "What's wrong with you Americans? What, are you crazy? How did that happen?" They were all dumbfounded. I'm talking about friends from Germany, Italy, France, Denmark.
Well, they
were just all amazed.
My own feeling is that if people say things like that to me, I just say, you know, Americans, they vote for who they want to. That's what democracy is all about.
Well, you know, I couldn't. I was just as dumbfounded as they. I didn't have the answer. That would have been smart.
We're talking with Margaret Avery. And Margaret, let's talk a little bit again. Welcome home. Roscoe Jenkins is on the screens now. Meet the Browns will be out in a month or so. Tell us a little bit about Meet the Browns.
Okay, Meet the Browns, another family situation. And it's headed with our Tyler Perry, of course, and he has the Madea character. And our star is the lovely Angela Bassett. And that fine, oh, my God, the ex-Laker player, Rick Fox.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Used to be with the Celtics, too.
Listen, ladies, he's every bit as good-looking as he is on television. I mean, he's wonderful. I know we did a cast reading, and he was sitting like, Angela was next to me to my left, and then he was just on the other side of her, and I kept trying to peer around to see him, and I thought, oh, come on now, Margaret, you can't be a grandma lusting after this young man.
That's funny. Now, he used to play with the Boston Celtics, you know, too.
Oh, did he?
Before he was with the Lakers, he was with the Celtics, yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, I really miss that old dream team of the Lakers, Robert Horry and Rick Fox and... So, but change, you know,
they do.
You have to move on.
Well, the Celtics have had some bad years. Now we got the best team in the league, so it changes.
Yeah, but you used to beat L.A., I understand, for years.
Well, that's
true. You always came to L.A. and beat us.
Yes.
Those Celtics.
Especially when Magic Johnson was there and Larry Bird were battling. They used to battle each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind
but
of
that's
fun.
That's when we started to have our day against them.
Yeah, I happen to... by the way, I'm a big fan of Angela Bassett. I think she's a stunning woman.
And she's a beautiful person.
Yes. Yeah.
Beautiful person. So, anyway, you asked me about the film. So, anyway, Angela Bassett, it started out that I was going to be her mother, and it was a scene in Chicago, and I said to the casting person, Ruben Cannon, I said, Ruben, I don't think you're going to need this scene. It's just all exposition. I love the part because it was written with I could see a little comedy with it and all. And wouldn't you know, about a week later, he calls me and says, Margaret, Tyler cut that scene. I said, I knew he would, because they didn't need it. So what they did, he said, but we would like for you to be a part of the Brown family, so would you play the part of Sarah? So Sarah and Frank Faison, that's my husband, they all come, we're the Browns, and they all come to our home, Angela, because her father died.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been estranged from her father most of her life, so she decides to come for the funeral, and that's when it all starts. And we have, once again, a dysfunctional family, and you know all that comes out with funerals.
Mm. See, I wouldn't buy you playing her mom. You're much too young and beautiful to be playing her mother.
Oh, I played her mom 15 years ago with, the Jackson 5 story.
Okay.
So, I mean, 15 years later, so.
I'm still not buying it. I'm not buying it then. I'm not buying it now.
It worked. And do you know what? Do you know that we do favor? When you see us together, there is a resemblance.
But there may be a resemblance, but I don't think it's mother and daughter. Maybe more sisterly.
Well, with a little gray in my hair and all. I mean, now you know that old ethnic expression, black don't crack. We don't wrinkle so much as losing the elasticity in our skin. So with makeup, you can look a lot younger or you can look a little older. But it's not. If you notice, we had a problem with that with Color Purple, our makeup artist. He went to a lot of pains to make us up because we had the luxury of meeting with him before we ever started shooting, because Color Purple, the film, takes place over a period of 40 years,
right.
And we age gradually. And it was horrible, his first impression of aging us. And we said, hey, both Whoopi and I said, you got to go look at how black people age. This ain't it. And he did. He went and did his homework. And you'll see, if you study, unless you're out in the sun an awful lot, we don't get a lot of wrinkles. It's losing the elasticity.
So when you aged 20 years in the film Color Purple, was it similar to your actual aging from Color Purple to now?
I would say so, because people say, oh, you don't look any different. And so I'm thinking, uh-huh, yeah, if you say I don't look any different, then that's because I'm looking like I aged in the film. But, you know, I've got the crow's feet, you know, around the little eyes that products are always trying to make money with women. But, you know, hey, I'm okay. I've earned my little crow's feet, and I have my health, and I'm happy to do.
Well, I'm looking at pictures of you on the web, and I think you look fantastic. So, what do you think of that?
Well, those web pictures turned out good, didn't they? You know what? If that photographer shoot you on the red carpet, and before you get home, you're on the internet.
That's true. By the way, folks can actually go to margaretavery.com. You have your own site.
Yes, I'm launching it.
Yeah, and I noticed that, so folks can go over there.
I am launching.
Check in.
I'm trying to join the 21st century and do that. I've finally got email down pretty well. I don't know the computer well enough to tweak it and get it to do things that it's supposed to do, but I'm the last 3 months I've done really well, because a lot of my business associates now only email.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gotten me up to speed.
So I understand you have a daughter, Aisha, right?
Yes.
Now, is she in the biz at all?
She said, no, Mom, I don't want to do it. I saw how hard you had to work, and I don't want to do that. So I was kind of relieved, because it's such a tough business for anyone, and particularly for women.
Mm. How old is she?
My daughter now? She's
yeah.
30.
Oh, really?
30.
Oh, wow. So what does she do?
She's in commercial real estate.
Okay. That's good.
Now, I have done a little real estate, and that's pretty hard, too. But she's a go-getter, and she works well with time management. Being more self-employed and in control of her time is something that she likes.
Well, I'm glad that that you are doing so well, and folks can see you, and welcome home Roscoe Jenkins, and maybe a little bit in the Meet the Browns film as well, coming up.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it yet now. So, Mark, I don't know. You never know what happened in the editing room. But
yes.
I think people, I mean, they got to show something of me since everyone's coming to my house.
They have to. I mean, they have to show you serving food or something, saying hello to
everybody. Well, I have some scenes with Jennifer Lewis, so probably I'm still in it if they have that conversation going.
And if you go to the movies and she's not in it, if you go to the movies and you don't see
Jennifer Lewis,
if you go see Meet the Browns and you don't see Margaret, then go right to the box office and demand your money back.
Yes, call Tyler Perry and say, why did you do that?
Well, Margaret, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish you lots of luck in the future, and more success and a great career.
So the website is being launched. I mean, I'm still working on it, but it'll be MargaretAvery.com, and I appreciate you mentioning it.
It was my pleasure, and it was a pleasure to have you on PNPNetwork.com as well.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. And you know what? I didn't even get a cold breeze. That's a bad joke.
Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.